Baby, just hold on. I'll be coming home, back where I belong. Hold on, baby.
Now, here's a little story I got to tell.
Welcome back to the show. We've got another one. This is Giants Amongst Us. Thank you for tuning in. This is the place where we share in the unique human experience and where you're going to hear real stories told by real people, people just like yourself. These stories are meant to give you a different perspective. These stories are meant to encourage you. Dare I even say inspire you if you're in a bad spot and you feel as if life is not worth the trouble. We all go through our struggles. We all come from different places. We all have our fair share of challenges, but change can be had. Just the way that life around us is constantly evolving, changing, it's never stagnant. So we look to apply that to our lives, to grow, to develop, and to evolve into better human beings in general, and also to be able to make sense of the world and to be able to navigate our ways through life, through its challenges, through its struggles, and just to become a more complete human being. How about that? So with that being said, today we're going to sit down and break bread with Jason Pike, who is a two-time author and also an ex-combat veteran who was deployed multiple times. He's going to talk about that with us. He's going to share his experiences overseas, what he's seen, his thought process while he was in a war zone. He had a couple of allegations going on that were looming over him, that were weighing down and just sucking the life out of him. People in the chain of command that were trying to assassinate his character and pin some very, very heavy charges on him while in combat. And during that time, he was also struggling with trying to cope and grieve the death of his father. These are things that were hanging over him. These are things that he was dealing with mentally, emotionally, spiritually, as he was overseas being deployed in a combat zone. How was he able to stay balanced? How was he able to do his job and survive and come back in one piece? He's going to talk about that. He's also going to share how it was for him when he was a kid coming up with a learning disability. The odds stacked up against him, being held back in the first grade, I think it was. There's a lot going on with this conversation, so rather than drag this on any further, I'm going to bring Jason on so he can share his story in his own words. This was raw, this was honest, this was sincere, and I think you all are going to enjoy it and take something from it. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, this is Jason and his story. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the show. This is Giants Amongst Us, where we share in that unique human experience. And today, I've got a very fine guest over here, Jason. He took time out of his day to spend with us, sit down, and talk a little bit of story. So thank you so much for taking time out of your day. You could have been doing anything, could have been anywhere, but here we are. So welcome aboard.
Hey, it's good to be on your show. I'm looking forward to it. And let's get into some wild and crazy stories.
Let's rock and roll. So for starters, you know, just to kick this thing off, you mind sharing with us a little bit about where you come from and how it was for you coming up?
Yes, I'm a career Army military guy, soldier in the Army. I did 31 years in the Army, five different countries, 9 years were overseas, and I was over there in Germany where you're at. And so I've been right to many, many places around the world, and I've seen a lot of things. I'm originally from a small town called Fingerville, South Carolina. That's a real small town. You could probably throw a rock over it. It's so small. I grew up in the country. I grew up, you know, fishing and hunting and running around in the woods, dogs and gardens, and I even grew some marijuana when I was a kid too. I kind of grew up that way out there, and it was a good childhood for the most part. I did have some issues that came along you know, some problems, learning problems and some physical problems. And that's kind of where I'm from and what I did. They call me a lieutenant colonel. I don't care about the title. I care about that paycheck that comes in every month. So, So I did 31 years and that's kind of where I came from and who I am. I got two books. I'm an author of two books out there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're definitely going to talk about that. And when we were offline, you were speaking about, now, what was it exactly that you were dealing with? Was it your leg, one leg, both legs?
Yeah. One leg. Oh yeah. My left leg, I got a disease called osteomyelitis when I was a kid. It's a bone disease and it infected. I bumped my knee like we all bump our knees when we're kids. But it triggered something that was already in the system. I'm not a doctor, but the damn thing blew up. It became infected and it became the size of a cantaloupe. And I like, whoa, this is, and it was in the 1970s. And it was very, very painful. They had to put these shots into the left knee to I guess it were antibiotics, but it had to go into the knee and it was painful. And eventually I kind of recovered. My left knee is a little bit deformed, but I did recover through pain. And
oh, that was so 100% recovery.
Yeah, it was basically about a 90% recovery. It was still looking odd. It still clicked. It clicked and clanked, and every once in a while it did that. But it was a pretty well good recovery, I would say.
How long was that recovery? You know,
about a year. I was on crutches as a kid, and once I got off the crutches, I had to build myself back up again. In other words, I had to physically, just exercise and things of that nature and just get back into the groove. And then when I became a teenager, I had to work on my legs and things. I was not a big guy. I was small. I was kind of skinny. And I had to like work on my legs and work running and things. But it's right now it's doing pretty good. It's really I can't run too much, as long as I just do my leg lifts and do my squats and do my leg extensions and keep the muscles around that knee. Yeah, that helps out a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Keeping active.
Oh, yeah. Keeping
to
active.
This day.
To this day. I keep active to this day. Oh yeah. Yeah. It's physical. It's more than just mental. It's physical. It's mental. It's spiritual in many ways. And so I enjoy to be physically active.
Me as well. And you talked about you spent a lot of time in the military. Now, just for starters, how did you find your way enlisting into the military? Was it something you always wanted to do?
The teachers and my high school counselors and even they knew that I could not go to college. They said that you've got these problems learning, which I did and I still do. I'm talking about doing very miserable on these college entrance exams. I'm talking about doing very miserable on these standardized testings. I just did very, very bad. I mean, so it was a letter was given. I failed the first grade. I failed English. Writing and reading is what I failed. And I know that I'm an author right now, but I got helped. I got help on that. But academics were one of the worst things of me, really. I mean, I talked about the physical problem, but the academic problem was really tough. So I assumed that I'm probably going to have to do manual labor or go in to the military as a private, because as long as I don't have a criminal record as long as I've stayed off drugs, whatever, alcohol thing, I don't know. I just said that's probably where I'm going to start at would be in the military, because college, they told me, even though I got three college degrees later on, but they said, hey, there's no way you can do that. And I said, okay, well, I'll just join the military. That's kind of how I was working on it. Yeah.
Mm. Okay, so it was you were just going off of what
the elders were
telling you, like, okay, you know, I guess I'm not cut out for college, so I'm going to go ahead and take this route. But then you ended up swinging back around and going to college.
And becoming an officer. Yeah, so I swung around. So I went into...
Was it active duty?
I joined into the National Guard. National Guard is a reserve force. They used the nickname of the National Guard was Nasty Girls. That's what Yeah, they used
nasty
to call them
girls,
nasty girls.
That's right.
We were a less, yeah, weekend warriors, drinking beer on the weekend, you know. So, you know, we were sort of like, I don't know, we're a bunch of yahoos, probably a bunch of rednecks just drinking beer on the weekends. But we were a less than best organization, and I joined them, Weekend Warrior. So my first initial experience with the military was going to basic training, and that was active duty. All, even National Guard people have to go to basic, their basic initial training. And that was in Fort Sill, Oklahoma, and it was hell for me. I mean, it was personally the most hellacious experience that I've ever, one of the most I've ever had. And it was, I don't know if you've seen the movie Full Metal Jacket, and that's exactly that setup, the language, the barracks, it was just exactly the way it was. Even I was in the Army, but see, Full Metal Jacket, that's the Marine Corps, but it was exactly that same way. And so I go there, and I'm one of the worst of the privates because I'm not able to drink that water coming out of that fire hose so fast. Do this, do that, do go here. And I'm just not picking things up. My sergeant, my drill sergeant, identified me and another soldier as probably one of the weakest, two of the weakest privates out of the platoon of 40. So, and this story that I'm telling you does not happen, but it happened to me. We went to a criminal correctional facility at Fort Sill, Oklahoma. CCF is what they called it. Send your ass to CCF. And we went there and it was a different level of hell. It was more of like a basic training on steroids. We didn't do anything criminal. It was sort of a drug deal with the sergeants to sort of like make or break the worst privates. And I was one of the worst out of the platoon. Let's send them there as a drug deal and y'all deal with them and y'all make this level, increase the level of hell, big rocks into small rocks, obstacle courses, screaming, yelling at a much, much higher standard or a higher degree. And that's what we did for about only 4 hours. And when we came back, I thought I was a criminal. I thought I was going to be processed.
It was like a good old smoke session.
It was a huge smoke session at a different, it was a big, but it was And I thought, and also you think you're with these criminals and they're all getting smoked. They're living there and you're just like, you're in and out. It's kind of a scared straight program. And we came out of there all bloodied up and broken. And oh my gosh, it was hell. And then that is what sort of tweaked me. That kind of changed me. I don't know, going through hell sometimes sort of it stimulates parts of the body or the brain. And I thought at that point I could do a whole lot more in my life than people, because some things you just can't explain. I can try to explain this thing to someone who's not in the military, or maybe it's hard. And so I come back and something that everybody detected a change in me. And I did eventually graduate basic training. I got out of that facility, but I said, you know what? They say I can't go to college. Fuck that. I'm going to go to college. They say I can't do this. I'm going to. You know what? They don't understand what the hell I went through. And so I wanted to sort of like challenge that, because, yes, I understand on paper and my behavior that I can't do this, you can't do that. And I understand that. But now I'm thinking, no, I don't believe that anymore. And so I started to believe in myself. And first time I got a girlfriend too, but so a lot of things worked out really well, and because I developed my self confidence, and so I got laid up to the age of 18, and that was pretty cool. So a lot of things changed just because of the Army going through a little extra hell and coming out of there and surviving and feeling confident that I could probably do a whole lot more. Yeah,
that was like a chain reaction, because you challenged. The authority that were telling you can't do this or you can't do that, you're only going to amount up to this. And at the same time, because of that, you ended up challenging yourself. Yeah. You became a whole new person on account of that, or that was your push towards a different direction.
Sure was. It was everything, my everything catapulted. I was still in high school as a soldier. I came because I had failed the first grade, so I was older. I come back. So, I joined when I was 17. I was in 11th grade high school when I joined. And when I graduated basic training, I did it between my junior
So you were in an ROTC program? Or
how but what we're talking about, the basic training, joining at the age of 17, I was still in high school. And I came back to high school to finish my 12th grade year. So you know, I'm a reserve soldier. So I did those 3 months of basic training and advanced individual training at Fort Sill, Oklahoma, June, July, and August. So I was like, so my summer was gone. I was active duty during my junior and senior year of high school because I was an older, So I come back, told everybody, like, ooh, this guy's changed. He's changed a lot. And so I became more focused, more steely-eyed, more determined. I had sort of flipped a switch, I guess. Sometimes that happens when you hit really hard bottoms and hard. I couldn't even express what the hell I went through. Because it was so raw in my brain. I know something happened, but there's no way I could explain it. And I just said, something's going. I was only 18. I just turned 18. And so I said, well, I think I'm going to go to college and I'm going to do this and that and this and that. And so that's kind of how my thought was processing there.
Yeah. When you get put in that environment, it does challenge and bring out some things in you that you before that had no idea were there. I don't know for you guys, did you have like certain things that you have to complete in order to graduate? Like, say, for instance, maybe a 20 plus mile road march or a 10 mile run. And those kind of things, when you think about it, you're like, no way I can do this. But once you actually get put in that position and put yourself to that test and realize the human body and the mind is capable of so much once it's under that stress and it's tried by that. And I'm sure that probably brought out some, like you said, the confidence in you, like, wow, I did this. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did it. I completed it. But it's the physical, it's the mental, it's the emotional. It's overcoming a series of stressful events that brought you into, I was pretty good at running and ruck marching but to me, all the mental games sort of screwed with me. The testing, the breaking down of different machines like M16 and guns, the weapons. So this mental thing and all the playing of the game sort of screwed with me. I could do push-ups and sit-ups all day long, and I'm okay with that. But yeah, so everybody has their but when it came out of there, I was like, dude, I think I can do more than people. I mean, I just came back to high school to complete my 12th grade year, and I was quiet, but I was focused, and I says, you know what, I'm going to do as much as I can on this 12th grade year. That's the, you know, and I'll have to go to a junior college, a less than best type of a school, just to get my basics, because I knew that my basics were pretty bad. That was raw in my mind, and I couldn't even explain what the hell happened. That's how raw it was, you know.
Coming out of basic training and then going into college, how was that? How did that work out for you? Did you struggle at first?
Well, you know, I went to a junior community college. I was kind of ashamed personally to go, because that's where the less than the best. And I got to start somewhere in life. And that's right, I thought, well, you know what? I'll just go to the junior college. And they take anybody who was lame, lazy, or crazy. And they didn't care about your test scores or anything like that in the past.
GPA, none of that
stuff. And I said, well,
come as you are.
And so I went in there and I applied myself. There were smaller class sizes and I got tutoring help. And I just worked and worked and worked. And I found jobs where you could study and work at the same time. So you could get paid like a security job and things of that nature. And I applied myself and I built up my confidence. I started from the general math and general biology and just the very basics that we should have probably known in high school. And then I just built it up. And then once I did 2 years, I was able to transfer. Now, you had asked about the ROTC. And, you know, even during that time, I was thinking I can become an officer in the military, meaning a manager. I thought that I could probably do that. So it's not only in my mind thinking about going to college, but I'm thinking I could probably be an officer in the military. So those things were forming, storming, and norming in my mind. And that's kind of what I did. So I went to junior ROTC program, and I went to a little Ranger cadet program, and I did as much military training as I could. So I was in the National Guard, and I was in college, and I was in ROTC. So I did all that at the same time, and I was working. So I had a lot of little feats in the fire in the feet, whatever. So I was going through a lot of different things at that stage from the age of about 18 up to 20, 22, and started at junior ROTC. I finished that junior college and the ROTC, and I went into a better university, Clemson University in South Carolina. And I went there and I got a contract as a ROTC scholarship cadet. And so my confidence, and I was moving up that ladder, you know, that little engine that could. I kept on just doing these micro steps, and I went through ROTC, and I did, eventually I got commissioned. I got my college degree, and I came out, you know, as a second lieutenant, commissioned officer, bachelor's, and I even went to my master's. I just said, fuck it. You know, I'm going to get my master's. I remember talking to my mother and father and said, what are you doing now? So I'm going to go get my master's. Nobody had a master's degree. He's like, I'm going to get my master's degree. I was like, oh shit. Okay. Like, okay. So I was like, I felt my confidence was very, very high. I felt that I could do a lot of things, and I jumped on that, and that was pretty cool. I mean, but I'm not going to say that I had issues along the way as well. I mean, nothing is perfect in life, and you always have ups and downs. There's valleys and there's mountains, and you have to go up and down. So that's a life. Yeah, in my first book, A Soldier Against All Odds, that's what we're talking about for the most part, yeah.
Yeah, man, that's shooting for the stars right there. You said, well, I guess it was coming down to the momentum you built to where you felt like, all right, I got my bachelor's. Now I'm almost there. Might as well
just for the master's. I did well as a, I was in a, so I did an area of concentration.
3 years, really, 4 years?
I took a little bit longer. I was on the 5.5 year plan, but my bachelor's degree, I had to do a whole lot of back end work just to get my basics. And then once I got my basics down, then I was able to transfer in. I probably did my bachelor's degree in about 5 years and my master's in about 5.5, another 6 months. So while I was doing my bachelor's degree, I was also working on things to get my master's degree. But I was, I fast-tracked on the master's program because I was in an area of interest that I enjoy. At the time, I was from a farming background. I did agriculture. But whatever you're interested in, whatever it takes to get the damn college degree, you just get it. And you want to get college educated, whether you're interested in getting whatever. So it doesn't mean that you're going to be in that field. It's just getting that certificate, the educational degree of what you might want to go for. But I fast tracked, especially in the master's program. But I was in an area of things that I was interested in, but I took it slower. Educational problems, I have an entire chapter in my book. It's called Where There's a Will, There's an A, as in the letter grade A. And I focus in on one chapter. I know this is a military memoir, but I focus in on how the hell I got my college degree and how I was able to get basic college education from someone who's a disabled on paper 3 different times, been verified professionally that I have problems learning and processing. So I just wanted to focus in on that. And so where there's a will, there's an A. It's basically just a way to how I studied, which was I would sit at the front of the class, or I would take tape recording devices to record the teacher, record myself. I developed these animalistic ways of learning that were like feeling oriented food. Sometimes I would read and study and put food in my mouth, or sweet tea or coffee. Sometimes I would just change my location where there's a different sight or in a different smell. And I would use these animalistic things of taste, touch. Sometimes I would touch the paper and read out loud, read into a recording, listen back to myself. So I used my senses of like an animal does in various different ways to scratch and claw to learn and to get the material inside my brain. But I have an entire chapter.
That book, that takes us or the reader through the whole journey.
Oh yeah,
right?
So a soldier against all odds is going to take you through the 31 years of my life of many failures, fiascos, successes. But you know, we love dirty laundry. We love failure because that's where you learn your stories of failure and fiascos and events. I come clean with that. That was the hardest thing to do, is to come clean with your issues. Hey, I'm a lieutenant colonel. I'm a senior person in the military. I'm perfect, right? But no, nobody's perfect. But to really get down to the heart and to communicate with people, you've got to show them your screw-ups and your failures and your vulnerabilities. And that's kind of what I did. Well, I did that pretty well in the book. And A Soldier Against All Odds will give you the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Going back to when you were talking about all these different animalistic ways that you figure out how to learn, was it through trial and error? Like, how did you get to that point where like you understood yourself in a way like, okay, this is going to work for me. And
I was watching television in the senior high school. I was 18 years old. I was about to go to college, and some guy on a commercial named John Ritter. John Ritter is a dude that was in a television show.
Three's Company.
Three's Company. Yeah, he's there. And he was on television saying, hey, if you don't know how to study, you need to get this tape. And it's a tape to teach you how to learn and study. I was like, well, that's me. So it was like, it was called Where There's a Wheel, There's an A. I named the chapter after his tape. So Where There's a Will, There's an A. And so that was, and I said, okay, I'm going to write in and get this little VHS tape and look through it. And I did. And I looked through it, and there's a lot of things in there that didn't apply for me, but it's like a toolbox, and you'll take the toolbox. You'll pick tools that work for you. They may not work for him or me or you or this. And so he gave me all these little techniques that I could use. But you could pick and choose what might, and I experimented. I actually experimented with what index cards, recordings, and it worked. I picked a few things that worked, and I exploited that on the chapter. But really, it could be like what works for me may not work for you. What works for you may not work for me. So that's kind of how I did it from John Ritter. I think he's passed away now. Yeah.
That's what it's about, and that is a big part of why I like sharing different stories from different people, because it's like a buffet. You take what is going to be tasty and delicious for your palate, and then you leave the rest. And the same with the stories that you hear and the different tools and resources that people are using. Now, one may not be, it isn't fitting for you, but then there's something else like, you know what, this resonates and clicks with me. I'm going to go ahead and add this to my to my toolbox. And then you work from there. Like, it seems like you were open to everything. Okay, well, this fits, this doesn't. And you kind of hybrid your machine to get it going exactly to where you want to get going in life. And so after you got your master's, was that when you enlisted full time into the military? How did you transition from going to college to getting in uniform, full active duty?
Yeah, so once I got my college degree and I got my master's degree, I was in the National Guard for about two.
You were still.
I was still reserve for a little while before I went active. I stayed on. I had a ROTC scholarship. Yeah, so yes, eventually I got picked up to go to active duty. I went on to active duty probably 2.5 years after I graduated. And they picked me up to go into the special forces. I went in with the Green Beret, the Snake Eaters. And so I had had some series of failures as a civilian person with jobs. I was still a reserve commissioned, National Guard. I was still a reserve weekend warrior. I had some jobs that just did not work out. I have been fired, of course. And they called me up, ironically, just saying, hey, we think we forgot about your obligation to go active duty. And they said, you need to go active duty to fulfill the obligation of the ROTC scholarship. So yeah, this is a great time. I didn't tell them I was unemployed and been fired from two jobs. I said, yeah, that's cool. Let's go for it. And so once I went on to active duty in 19, that was it. I was like, I'm going to stay here. This is where I'm going to stay at. And that's kind of the, I went into the 10th Special Force. Yeah, the Green Berets, the Snake Eaters. But I was a Red Beret. I was airborne, but I was a support person for the Special Forces. Yeah.
Okay. But you still had to go through, like, they have their own separate, like, kind of like a basic training or something.
You just got to volunteer. No? I mean, you've got cooks, you've got supply sergeants, you've got. So I was just another officer that was at a support level. I was a chemical officer on the battalion staff. I had already been through airborne school, which is jumping out of airplanes. When I was in ROTC. So I've been certified as an airborne trooper. They called me up and they said, all you have to do to get here is to say yes, volunteer, and verbally say, I will go, I will volunteer. That's it, really. That was the only thing I had to do. And that was a very good place to start as in the Special Forces.
Would you sign up for, how many years did you sign up for?
I had to do a 3-year obligation. So it was only a 3-year obligation. And I went ahead and once I got in, I decided I made a decision. This is it.
All in.
I'm in. It was more like the benefits, the retirement, the money, the pay was pretty good, I thought. It was more secure, and you got to travel. You got to go temporary duty. You moved up these rank structures more. I thought, from lieutenant to captain to major, this and that. And then the schooling and the travel opportunities, I said, all I got to do is 20 damn years, and I'll have a paycheck for the rest of my life. And as long as I keep myself out of trouble, which might have been tougher to do. And I said, this is it. I'm going to stay here. And so I basically stayed. I don't want to get too detailed, confusing on this, but I transferred my specialty from the Chemical Corps into the Medical Service Corps, and I stayed on board. I didn't go permanently into Special Forces. I really, really enjoyed Special Forces very much. The culture, the adventure, but they were broken and bruised up really bad once they get into their 30s and 40s. And again, I was thinking 20 years. I'm thinking, I want to get out, but I also want to be relatively healthy. So I had a vision of this is where I want to be and go. And whatever it takes me, I want to get into an area of interest and not getting all, yes, I love Special Forces, but that's a young man's game. I want to stay in this thing I want to be in the long game, not just a short game. So I want to get my 20 years, and I went into Medical Service Corps and something area of interest in public health, prevention of diseases. And then I stayed on board with that for the 20 years. So Special Forces, Green Berets, just in the very beginning, and then transferred off into more of a Medical Service Corps, public health type of background.
And when you were in the Medical Service Corps, that took you to a lot of places, right? A lot of deployments, and you went probably all over the world.
I went to Korea, El Salvador. I have been to Afghanistan and Germany. So yes, and then just many places I can't even talk about. So, but that learning of different cultures and different foods and different women, and it was just such an eye-opening experience that I thought, whoa, I'm doing things, I'm going places that none of my family members or people that I graduated with high school have ever done. And again, I'm thinking I have gone above the zone. I have gone above things that I just can't explain. And I said, well, you know what? Yeah, this is cool. I mean, I'm learning, I'm growing and getting promoted and going to schools and so having a good time. And I thought I'll just continue this path,
The book that you mentioned, and I'd like you to talk a little bit about that because you have two books now. One of them, which one did you write first? Is it Against All Odds?
Oh yeah, the memoir, A Soldier Against All Odds, is my first. But I had to hire a ghostwriter, I had to hire a trainer. It's like having a personal trainer that knows how to be objective, do this. And he would type stories out for me. He would videotape me and my stories, and just like we're doing right now. We went through 1,000 of these sessions that I'm doing now over a period of about 4 years. And he got all this information up and he just threw it out and he came up with the story. Of course, even if I knew how to write, I wouldn't recommend you writing it, because if it's emotional storied life, it's really difficult to process it objectively because it's your life. You want to get someone to help you out to form the story. That's what I did. So I had a ghostwriter, and I started doing that after retirement, and it was like just a side project. And what sometimes we don't know, like when you push, like if you're pushing push-ups or you're pushing weights, or if you're out there exercising, you're stretching, you can push the memory cells. And a lot of these things I have forgotten, but I have someone working with me, asking me these questions over and over, just like you're pushing up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then after a while you break through and you remember things that you forgot about. I don't know. There's a memory muscle somewhere, I guess. And that's what happened. And I didn't journal. You asked about journaling. I didn't journal. I just had somebody work with me over and over and over, bam, bam, bam. And then my memory, I'm remembering this. Oh, and so that's kind of how that worked.
And you said, so this was after you already retired. Was there something in particular that kind of triggered it? Like, you know what, this will make something worth speaking about and sharing with other people to help them along the way.
My father died. That took a boom. When my father died, I was in hell, and he always talked about having a legacy for himself. And I thought, well, he had a lot of stories. And I'm thinking, and then when my mother died not long after him dying, I said, I am going to write a book. And, I wouldn't want to do it while they're alive, but I wanted to do it after they passed away. So that's what the death of my family, my mother and my father, that's kind of what triggered me to do it. It's like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do this. I don't know how to write a book. I've never written a damn book. I don't know how to market a book. I don't know all this. There's so many things I just didn't know. But I said, well, I can figure this thing out and get some help. And that's exactly what I did. And I just went ahead and I says, let's do it. Let's make this happen. And the damn book was probably the most proudest moment after retirement. Retiring from the military is a proud moment, but just getting this book done is like one of my cherished, like it was like, it's kind of like a bucket list, which I'm not going to die, but it was a bucket list item. It was like, and it was a big one. And I can look back and always, I didn't know it was going to do as well as it did. I had no idea. I just did the best I could with the book. And it definitely hit number one many times.
In this short meeting with you right now, I mean, it seems like that's what you're about. If I don't know how to do it, I'm going to figure this damn thing out one way or the other. Like if it came from the, we're talking about writing the book, and or just the whole process of putting a book out there and publishing it and getting it out to the public, racking your brain and going through everything that you went through, your experiences, and then finally putting it on paper. But then, and then going back to school and try to figure that thing out. You know, how can I learn better? How can I grow? How can I make this, use whatever my weaknesses are, figure out how to either strengthen them or just navigate around it to where I can use something that's going to benefit me. So it's really, it sounds like, you know, you're about
troubleshooting. Yeah. You're like, okay, what do you want to do? Write it out or think it out or put it there on like black and white. This is what I want to do. And then, run, go for a walk your dog, look at it. You know, I mean, grandmother a long time ago said, put that goal or put that task on your refrigerator, because we're always going to have to go to the refrigerator to get something to eat or drink. And so you have it there and you have something there that you're okay. And you're triggering it and you're like, bam, bam. Oh, okay. But it's like, okay, well, I want to do this, but how do I get there? And if you just keep like every once in a while butting up against it, eventually you're going to get through the gate, but it might take a little while. You'll get through the gate.
Since you've already fleshed it out and put it on pages and now the book is available, it's published and everything. Was there one, I know you've been through a lot, you know, you're like a cat with 9 lives, but was there something in particular that you like going through it and then just rethinking it and recommunicating it something that sticks out was like, oh man, this was really tough to, it was kind of taxing emotionally, spiritually, and, you know, mentally to think about and to put out on the pages. I'd like you to also speak about, you know, we can get in that maybe towards the end, like where we can find, probably available everywhere, right? You said it's Audible.
It's Audible on Amazon, jasonpike.org, jasonpike.org. But you're going to find it on Amazon. That's where it's going to be at with all the reviews. Just look at the reviews. You make your mind up on the reviews. And yeah, and so the Audible is in my voice. I am the narrator. I am the author. You're going to feel the authenticity of the book. And that's what's going to, I think. And so, narrator, author, jasonpike.org. That's my social, all my social media is on the website. So, but yeah, if you want me to, and you were exactly correct. There's some people call me Nine Lives in many ways, but I can go into one of the deepest, darkest times of my life. And it was not a war zone. It was not in the war. The deepest and darkest time did not have to do with getting shot at or seeing people getting shot. It really had to do with your own people, my own organization, the people that I work with that are in peacetime. That's what it had to do with. And it was a personality situation. I'm going to tell you that I was not always the smartest knife in the drawer. I was a little bit awkward, a little bit socially awkward. That's just my character. I was a quiet, I'm not as outspoken as I was back then. I was more quiet and shy and stuck to myself a bit. I had an awkwardness about me, but I didn't get along. I was a senior person at the time when the darkest times hit. I was a senior. I was a lieutenant colonel in the Army. I had served probably at that time over 20 years in the military, and I was in South Korea. South Korea is just a station that we go to. I've been there. This is my third time going over there. This is where the situation that I'm going to talk to you about happened. It was in South Korea. It was peacetime. Even though it was post 9/11, we were peacetime with South Korea. It was a garrison environment, you know, 9-to-5 job, pretty much. And I had my family there. So I was not alone. I had my family. I had a daughter. I had a wife. And pretty much doing pretty well in the military overall. I have not gone overseas to the war zone. I had been to El Salvador. I had been to other places, but not into the war zone. But this was my worst time that happened. And it was just a personality conflict, really, of how I should do my job. Now, I have strengths. My strengths are leadership and executive work. Not really doing a lot of the detailed nut work of publications and research. So I had a conflict with some senior people, just more of a conversational, like a disagreement about nothing yelling or screaming, just like, you know, I feel that I could do better if you put me in these executive levels, like just leadership and management, instead of like having to do neat, detailed type of a work. And it didn't go well. What I failed to understand, my failure at understanding is power politics in the military. And I didn't know that people can take things so personal that they get a vendetta, they get vindictive towards you. I just thought it was a disagreement and not necessarily anything personal. And it's like, you know, if you want to do this, that's fine. But I feel I need to do this. And it was more like they took it personal. Everybody's got a little space of turf that you walk. I walked on the turf, treaded on the turf. I didn't know the turf was so damn important. And so that was my failure as well, not understanding that. And I found myself in a series of investigations and accusations that were very hurtful to me. I mean, frankly, I've been shot at in war, but I would rather be shot at than have these things. But I'll develop a story also that it is really difficult to get rid of a senior military person. It is really difficult to even transfer them. Because once you're set in the government, either it be the government or the military, it's kind of hard to you know what, to transfer you or to eject you out. And but what you can do, these people that were against me, what they did do is they stirred up rumors and then later on an investigation. So I'll form it that way. So there are games that can be played in the government, in the military, that can screw with people and get them away or transfer them. So what it was in the beginning, I talked to you about, I just didn't walk the walk. I didn't talk the talk. I walked on some turf. I did some things that there, nothing unprofessional, more like just aggressive. Well, the first thing that I faced was I was considered a pedophile. A full colonel in the Yongsan Army Garrison threw out a rumor throughout not only the office, but that I was a pedophile. And that was only a rumor and it was an accusation and didn't go anywhere. It didn't go anywhere, but I had to live with false allegations from senior people that I was a pedophile. Nothing happened. There was no investigation, nothing. It was just like, okay, got dirty looks and things of that nature. My daughter and my wife were there and my daughter went to the Seoul Elementary School and I was a playful father. I was a very outgoing, loved fatherhood very, very much. And yes, I went to the school and I ate lunch with my daughter and I would play out there on the playground swinging on swings. And I just, you know, I loved that young phase of fatherhood very, very much so. But I was not a pedophile, but they threw that out there. Nothing happened. Okay, so a year later, after the pedophile was gone, then this was more serious, this accusation. This was a federal investigation of subversion and espionage against the U.S. government. So with this one, I went on top of the hill, Yongsan Army Garrison there at the Dragon Hill, on Dragon Hill. And this was like, okay, they had CID, Criminal Investigation Division, and then they had MI, Military Intelligence. So I'm going to give the enemy credit. If they didn't hit me one way, they tried to hit me a different way. So I went from a pedophile to a spy within a year and a half. So I went up there and I faced the wind about a federal investigation of espionage against the U.S. government. And CID was there. So they had two different offices in this office up there near the gas station. So it was a Japanese compound. So you had CID, two sets of CID, two sets of MI. One was in my commander's office, and one was in the office that I was being briefed, and they were being briefed at the same time with two sets of them. This is what's going on. This is what's going on. This is what Jason's accused of. This is what's going to happen. We're going to follow through with this investigation to see if there's any. Okay. Like, I was really angry. And I was also blindsided because I thought, oh, well, I'm going to go face pedophile charges. But no, it was espionage charges. They had changed this thing up. And that became like, oh, God, I can't believe this happened. I'm like, no, I have not been selling secrets. I have not been passing on information to foreign nationals. And so from that point on, I went through an investigation that occurred for about a year, year and a half. My security, I had to get a defense attorney. I never went to the level of having to go to court because there was nothing there. But I had to just get a defense attorney and tell him what was going on and just watch my back. And they had monitored my computer. They had monitored my activity and they were scoping me. They were scoping me out. And nothing happened. Nothing, there was nothing that went to the court, but it did drive me into paranoia because I don't know, like, I definitely know people are out to get me. I became a damn pedophile. Now I'm a damn spy. I haven't done a damn thing. So, eyes developed in the back of my head. I was even wondering myself, like, am I really going crazy? And I felt guilty, I felt ashamed, and I haven't done anything. And that was the hardest part of my entire life, was right there as a senior person in the military with many, many accomplishments and many college degrees. And the first time I ever sought mental health was there, and that was when it was not popular and at all. And I went to chaplain to get him. I was like crawling on the floor, like starving for something. I said, I'll go chaplain. I'll go mental health. I'll go any. That's how bad it was to try to get some help. And I had my family there as well. They were They were very helpful with me, but woo, I unloaded a lot to you. So I don't know if you got any questions, but I.
That is crazy. I mean, because I'm trying to understand now, is all of this able to get pushed to the extent it was pushed just off based off of hearsay? Like there was nothing that they had that they can stick on you or, you know, any kind of evidence or anything. It's just a superior that is saying this. And so because of that, they were able to take it to where they were going to push charges and really throw the book at
you? Yes, yes. They had verbally told me that I would go to a board of inquiry and that I would be kicked out. Wow. That would be kicked out. That bitch told me, she said, once they know you have issues with children, you will not be no more of a popular guy.
Where did that come out of? Because you were spending time with
your
daughter.
Yes, I was. And that woman didn't have a damn daughter. She didn't have any children. She was not married. I don't even know if she ever had a boyfriend or not. But she, for her to say that, she doesn't know. So she was sort of like a woman on the rag in a way, that was a colonel. It was like she was like screaming and yelling. She was always upset about something, but that's just her temperament. And I think, you know what? That's where I almost dropped. I've never dreamed of years to kill people, like fantasize over. We've all got angry and we say, I'm going to kill them in a day or two. And that was a fantasy. I would fantasize for years. Mm-hmm. On the people that did me wrong in the situation that I described. And not just 1 year, two, I talked about 5 years, 6 years. I had to go through therapy after retirement just on this one event that I talked to you about. And it lived with me for a long time.
Those are some serious charges.
Yeah, there were some serious charges. They had pushed me in a way, I don't know, we all got our trigger point, I guess. But it pushed me in a way that I have never been pushed before. And it really affected me. It really did. It was like, this is the only thing I've succeeded at. And now they're trying to like throw you out of the family.
Even people around you, right? I'm sure that there was a lot of people around you that were looking at you a little different now. Like, wait a minute. Assassinating your character.
So the only thing that you talked about, it was assassination character. It was sort of a grieving process. I'm back on my own. I'm back on the street again. I'm going to have to. And I really thought I was going to get kicked out of false bullshit that was being stirred up. And the only thing that stuck was a bad evaluation. One time bad evaluation. That was the only thing that was not really bad. It was much less than best. That was the only thing that stuck. There was no legal things that stuck. My security clearance was clear. It was cleared. There was no problems there. But I went through a lot of hell, and it really was a punch. It was something that weakened my core structure of who I was and who I developed to be. It sort of, we all got that point where we break away, and that
sort of knocked you down, huh?
That definitely knocked me. That definitely knocked me. In a like a psychological way. That was a tough time. That was a tough time. And of course, you know, my thought process was, you know, suck it up like I do everything else. Just suck this thing up. And but that doesn't work really well sometimes. And you eventually have to break. I mean, other things that come along in life are going to make you more. You have to process things out. You have to get things out. Because if you don't get it out, you can't become stronger later. You have to get these emotions, these things and feelings. And At the time I was like, I got other things to do, man. I'm gonna knock out Afghanistan. I'm gonna go over here. I'm gonna go over there. I'm gonna show them. I'm gonna show them throughout time. Success will be my revenge.
How long did this process get dragged on where you were having these charges over you and you were dealing with one thing after the other?
They didn't tell me they were sorry. They didn't come to me and say, we fucked things up. They didn't say that. It just went away. But in my mind, I was still in paranoia, feeling that even after I left South Korea, maybe somebody's still trying to get me. You know, I was thinking, so I'm in a war zone. My father had died shortly after that in federal investigation. My father had died. I had talked to him about it. And then I was going to be placed into Afghanistan in a war zone. Yeah. Right after my father died, I went over there and I took a command over to Afghanistan. But the war zone was not really bad. In other words, to me, I had been trained up for it. This is my life. This is what I've been doing. So the war, it was having these other skeletons in the closet that I hadn't processed with. I had the damn federal investigation that was giving me paranoia on a day-to-day basis, regardless if I was in a war or not. And then, of course, my dad's death. I went right over to Afghanistan after my dad's death. So when I was in war, my processing ability had gone down, and I had to tell my soldiers, I could have declared mental health and avoided the war because we have to go through a screening process. But, you know, I don't know. I said, you know, my father wouldn't want me to do this, and he had just died. And I told my troops that my father had died and that you're going to have to help me out because I'm like really low. I never did tell them about the federal investigation because it was still too raw in my mind. I couldn't even understand that myself of all that stuff that had happened. And so I just said, just take care of help take care of me. And then they did. They took care of me. I took care of them the best I could. I was the commander over there, and we did about a year in Afghanistan. You know, we had 3 to 5 times a week where you had bombs that would come in, indirect fire, mortar rounds. We would run out of the bunkers and we would run out of our tents to go to the bunkers. We were just doing our job over there. We were not the war fighters as far as going to kill people. We were pretty much in there for medical support,
right.
In their support. I saw a Humvee got blown up outside of the gate, had an IED, an improvised explosive device, just vaporized the Humvee with everybody in it. And again, you know, how I got through some things was an entire, like a deep focus on what I need to do. Left foot in front of the right, go straight. Don't deviate. Try not to get distracted. I have an end in mind. End is to get out of the event or get through the mission. So I would not like go to funerals. I would not want to go see the Humvee got blown up. I didn't want to see it because I had a focus. I said, I'm going to stay. They were not my soldiers anyway, but I wanted to focus on one foot in front of the next and go towards the mission, get out of there. And then I can think about this stuff later on. So yeah, that's kind of how my thoughts were at that time.
I checked out your website, and then you had some blogs, and some of the topics are navigating mental health and then just overcoming challenges. Now, is there something that really helped you out during the deployment? Because it sounds like you had two battles going on. You had the battle that's going on around you externally, and then you had that internal battle with the death of your father. And then on top of that, like you mentioned, these federal investigations that were hanging over your head. I mean, how were you? Mm. Yeah, what were some tools or some resources or something that helped you out during that time?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. So this was like really early on. I did this by accident. Like I said, I was a sort of a creator. I played around with things, and this is what worked for me. I got on the machine, the elliptical machine. I started to cry on the machine while I was in a physical state, and I started to laugh, and I didn't care about who was around me. I got mad on the machine. I was like, I want to beat up the machine, and I allowed my internal feelings to come forward while I was in a physical state of sweat. That right there just did something to me. It felt like I was using the bathroom. You know, you've seen people with a punching bag. You can probably imagine what they're thinking about, punching a bag. But you can do this also with grief. You can do this with loss of life. You can do this with many, many things. And it doesn't, and you can allow your emotions to come through with the physical process. And it's kind of like an emotional vomiting using a toilet. It was just, I cleared myself very well that way. And I would continue to do that over and over a period of time that helped me out a lot. So, but You know, it could be walking your dog. It could be talking to your dog or crying with your dog. What I'm saying is there's a toolbox there. There's many different tools. You just got to check out what's right for you. But a lot of people, that they may not want to do it. So, man, it's too hard. I have to try this. I have to try that. And that's going to take me stress to do this and do that. Yeah, exactly. Got to try it out, man. It's like a menu, a buffet, like you talked about. Try it out, man. It's like, just give it a try. Well, I don't like crabs. Oh, well, I don't know. I don't even know what they taste like. Maybe I can try them. So it's just one of those things. Try this method out. And, you know, I personally don't like yoga, but that's just me. Meditation, oh, maybe okay. But, you know, there's just many things out there to help you with your trauma or your situation that you're in. Personally, I don't care about the medicines. I'm a more of a natural, but that's just me. But hey, medicines may help you, but they didn't help me at all. But that's just my thoughts on these things that you try and try and try again and check it out. You know?
And that's something that you would do. Were you doing that like on a weekly basis or a daily basis?
Daily basis. I do it now. Not necessarily to that degree because I'm not in that state of hell that I was before. But if I do get into some stressful times, I will do that in more of a minimalist way. I mean, like, you know, you're out there gymming, you're running it, or you have your iPod and you're allowing your emotions to come through this way or that way. But I'm thinking you got to get in touch with the feelings of the core self, express them through a physical, to me, just physically, and then allow that to come out. It's kind of like it's kind of a healing. It's a, like we all, every day we go to the toilet, every day we, you know, we have to go to sleep, wake up, we have to eat something. It's sort of a management technique that you can do that I found that was good for me. I found another thing out just not long ago. There's a facility where you can sit into a sauna, allow all, you know, you sauna, all the sweat comes out, and then jump into an ice bath.
Yeah.
And then get that cold, that heat. It's like, woo, I did that today. And it just makes me feel good. Mm-hmm. And they say there's a bunch of science behind it, but I don't know. I just do it because it feels good to me and it works for me and it's not a drug. So like I say, you know, nobody likes to sit in the ice water. I understand that. But your mind, you break a barrier, you push back, you don't know what you don't know. And now it's a relief for me in many ways. Yeah.
I think that's important. And that's something that you see that could be a problem for people. I mean, I'd say myself included, you know, like you mentioned, if there's anything that's going on in your life and that you're struggling with, things that you've dealt with, failures, mistakes, trauma, abuse, whatever it is. But to be able to sit or, like you said, be active, but to feel those emotions, because we're, you know, it's real easy to run away from them or to just numb it with, we have medications, we have alcohol, we have drinks. I mean, take your pick. There's a lot of ways where we can just numb it and we don't want to deal with it because it's painful. It hurts. But after that, like you experienced, there's a release. That's the only way I think that you're going to flush it out, release it, and then you can move forward with it. But you have to be able to sit and experience those emotions.
Yeah, it's tough though. I mean, in a lot of times it's tough. I mean, you go through the pain, reliving the failure, the broken situations that may have occurred, and that's. And then my book was also a release. This is another way of my therapy. You're helping, and I continue by talking to you and telling you these stories. That's also another method of healing and letting other people say, "Hey, man, like this happened to you." And you know, so I go through different ways of doing this. You, the book, the writing, the podcasting, whatever it takes to heal and to come to the closure. And you know what? Like if somebody says, "Hey, man, you helped me out a lot." So I'm on that level of the mountain where like if I help somebody out and they tell me something happened, like, to me, it makes me feel good in a way that is probably different. For me to help somebody out, I'm at a point in life where like if I help anybody out, dude, you don't know. there's no amount of money for that. And it's like I'm at a different zone, and
that's priceless.
Huh? It's priceless on that one. Yeah, so whew, got me on that one. got me going on there. Yeah,
talking about how I mentioned earlier, I was on your website, and then one of the quotes that I like that I read from you was the one that said, "I have been neck deep in shit and almost drowned, but I got out, and you can too."
I've been neck deep in shit. If you want to go to that story, I got that one. Yeah, yeah. I can. I have almost drowned in shit, really. And it was in 1994. It was in South Korea. It was my first station to South Korea. I was a soldier. I was a lieutenant. I was there, land navigation, walking around in the woods with a map and a compass is sort of a basic skill thing that we train on. And, I'm a lieutenant. And I got a map and a compass. That's kind of dangerous. But, no, it really was.
Walking in circles.
Walking in circles, yeah. But I was on this field exercise, but it was more of a, it's called an expert field medical badge. It's a badge that you get. And we did this solo. We did this on our own as far as these exercise. Well, the situation was, okay, I'm going to do some land navigation. They dropped us off, about 20 of us, to do this exercise. Some of them were privates, some of them were sergeants, some of them were lieutenants like me, whatever. So we have our individual areas that we go to find our maps, to find the points on the map, and to go through the exercise. It was at night. We were alone. Well, I was walking along at night, and everybody was doing different places. We're all separated from each other, doing different types of exercise, doing the map navigation, land navigation. I smelled it. I smelled a cesspool. They had told us these things were there. They use shit as feces. They use it as fertilizer in their crops. And I said, okay, I could smell it. I know it's over there. I'm going to stay away from it. And so there's a slick. I slipped into something that was very slippery. And then like at night, like really very fast, I went into a shit pool, a cesspool. It was on the side of the road. I was neck deep in it. I felt at the time that I was going down. It was like a quicksand material. You got to understand, I have my rifle and I have my equipment, my backpack, and I have a lot of things on me, and it's sinking. I'm sinking down into it. So I was going down in shit, and it was at night, and I was alone, and it was in a foreign country, a place that they don't speak English very well, out in the countryside. And you know what? I felt that I was going to drown in shit. I really did. I felt that I was going to die there and feces and shit. As a lieutenant, I was probably 28 years old, and never been married, never had children.
Damn.
And so I thought, you know, my thoughts at the time while I was going down, like in the feces of the shit, I thought that, you know, I got more to life to learn. I don't want to die like this. I felt, you know, I've never had any family. I've never had any children. And, you know, my last name is Pike, and they're going to call me Poopin' Pike. And I'll go down I'm going down in shit. I mean, I'm going to drown. This is not a great thing. This is not a way to go out. And I started like experimenting. I got up. I kind of got up on it as a caterpillar movement, very, very slow caterpillar movement. And I got on top of it, instead of it bringing me down, but it took me a slow time for me to sort of maneuver my, I rope crawled out of the shit, and then I made it onto dry land. I flipped over on my back and I looked up at the stars, and I thought, you know, God, you know, why do you put me in this shit? Like I almost drowned in shit, and I got out. I felt, God, why does this happen to me? It seems like, you know, it's all these stupid things are happening to me in my life, and like drowning, and they said, well, you know what? Now I've got another problem. And this was my mind. I thought, the next problem I have is to get out, find a way. I'm a mob of shit. I'm smelling like shit. I've got to find a way to get back to camp without anybody knowing about it. I don't want to say anything. I want to save my face, my embarrassment. You know, I'm a lieutenant. I just fell into shit. Like, now I'm a monster. So I said, I gotta find a way to save my face. So I walked to, I'm not supposed to do this, but I did it anyway. I walked to a Korean farmhouse family. I went up. I don't even know how to speak Korean. I knocked on the door. Annyeonghaseyo, annyeonghaseyo, annyeonghaseyo. They come, a woman comes to the door, looks at me, and is like, I go. I was like, at this point, English was not necessary. We kind of went off the street.
Sign language.
Sign language. She motions me to strip naked. I strip naked in front of a complete strange woman. I give her everything except my weapon, my map, and my compass. And then I walk about a mile through the woods naked, barefoot naked. I give everything to her. We have an agreement that she was going to wash it up and give it to me, or figure out where I'm at and give it to me. And I walk back to camp naked. You know, at this point, I call it a night for myself. And as I was walking back naked, I made sure I wanted to stay away from anybody. I didn't want to see me walking back naked or smell me or see me. So I kind of motioned my way through there and I got back to camp. I moved everything on the outside. I cleaned up a little bit because I figured that she was going to come out and come to the camp. And she did. My fairy godmother, Ajima, the woman of the, she came and gave me all my clean clothes early that morning. And I got away with, I saved my face. I saved my life. And I got out and but I failed the course, but 2 out of 3 ain't bad. So I was successful 2 out of 3 times. Yeah.
Wow. Talking about literally drowning in shit.
Yes. Drowning in, being neck deep, being almost drowning in shit. Yes. I got out of that. There's just been so many things. Just these life events that occur that are just almost just kind of ridiculous. A lot of failures and fiascos are throughout the book. A lot of failures and fiascos. I mean, at that time, falling into shit, you know, that was like, I got out of it. Man, damn, I think I can do all. You build up these like, oh man, I've been in shit. I don't want to tell anybody about it, but that, you know, I had to work just to talk to someone about it. Took me years. To me, that's not trauma, but I don't know. To me, it could be trauma to somebody. It could, may not be. At the time, I wanted to forget about it and go on in my life. But, you know, there's things that I consider trauma. But you know what? Trauma to you is what's not trauma right to me, or vice versa. You know, and it doesn't mean anybody's more tougher than anybody else. It just means that some things hit you differently than other people. But no, that was I consider that a very funny, good event to look back on that I experienced.
I was going to ask you something like that too. Was that out of all these different situations you've been in, like what was one of them that was a real close call? It seems like that was one of them right there where it seemed like it was almost curtains for you.
It was almost, yeah, that was near death. It was pretty much I could have gone under. If I didn't play around with how to caterpillar out of it, no one taught me that. I just played around in the shit.
When you were chin deep in it, you were slowly going all the way down?
Slowly going under.
Did it feel like it was going in slow motion for you? Or?
I remember watching these shows in the 70s where quicksand, you got to go. I was wanting to go very slowly. I purposely wanted to go slow. I'm now in a totally different situation that's bringing me down. So I wanted to move slowly. I do remember seeing television shows of people dying in quicksand in Africa, whatever these.
Yeah.
And I remember that they said, you go slowly. So I used to watch them as a kid. And I said, go really, really slow. Really slow. And that's what I did. I did it really slow. And I maneuvered to get on top. Very, like you're back in, you're here. And then you sort of go up horizontal and then make yourself out. And that's kind of what I did.
You're able to think about this as you're going through that and not panic.
You know what? There is a certain quality, I will say positively, that once I go into a situation like that, I become calmer and creative. There is a certain zone I go into. At least there, I became more calm. I didn't panic. I didn't do that, which I don't know. When I was in the federal investigation, I was in a paranoia panic mode. But when I was like living, when I was about to die in shit, I became, I don't know, more calm and collective. I was more, yeah. So different situations I reacted differently to, yeah.
There's a whole lot to dig into once somebody picks up that book. I'm definitely going to check that book out. And that was the first book that you wrote. I know you have another one, Out of the Uniform, Back into Civilian Life.
Yeah, Out of the Uniform. That's like the veteran self-help guide.
It was 31 years in the military. Now for you, once you were out of the uniform, you hung up the BDUs and you were out of the combat boots, how was that transition into civilian life? And
it was a tough time for me mentally. I got out of the military because I was so burned out. I was so mentally exhausted. Plus, I had that mindset of suck it up. Don't, try to suck everything up and try to live with it all. And I was burned out mentally, not physically, but more mentally, emotionally. From what we talked about, from the federal investigation, my father's death, and Afghanistan was just minor, but I had burned it, and I got out. I should have, really, in hindsight, I didn't write about this, but I should have got out on a medical discharge, but I went ahead and went out regularly as a retirement, honorable. I was honorably discharged, but no, I was in Germany. I was over there where you're at when I was being discharged. Uh-huh. And the damn people would not help me with my veterans disability packet, the information that you do. You put in your veterans benefits and you want to get some help. And the people in Germany were not doing a damn thing for me, not in Landstuhl, not anywhere in the entire country. I did know people in the United States, but they told me it was out of my jurisdiction. So I had to do it all myself. With my book that I wrote, there's only one thing I tell you, the big takeaway is get a veteran service representative, like get somebody to help you. Don't do what I did. But that's the reason I learned a lot is because I had to do it myself. And I did very well. I came out completely at 100%. But that's why I wanted to write the book. My second book was just about veterans benefits and how to get your benefits and how I did it and stories along that line. It's more of a self-help guide of how I did it in a very basic language that's easy to understand.
You hear about it. I know I've met people that either they said that they've had trouble receiving their benefits, and then some, like there's some people talk about just the flaming hula hoops that you got to go through that. And, some people get discouraged. What do you think in your years of experience is like a common hurdle that some veterans have with going through the process to finally receiving their benefit?
Well, yeah, I think one of the big hurdles is their pride. They feel, you know what? I'm honorably and I don't need the extra benefits because I am strong. I have done this. I don't need any help. And they don't want benefits in a way. They reject them. They say, that's for other people. They don't understand in their own mindset that this is just not about them. They're not saving the government money. They're being dishonorable to themselves by not getting the benefits. This could live past their death to their spouses or to their dependents. They don't understand the depth of the benefits process. It's more than just a monthly. They might think they cannot work because they're labeled as a disabled veteran. That doesn't mean that. So there's a lot of myths out there that I try to unfold and pack into the book. No, you're not being dishonorable to. You're being honorable to get your benefits, and you're gonna provide more fun for your family, your friends down the road. This thing extends down the road, down the path of life, and even after death. Whether it be a gravesite at Arlington or what I'm saying is there are many, many second and third order benefits that are in this process throughout the life and post life that a lot of people just don't understand. And I try to put that in a way with a series of links and how I think about this process. But no, the post-traumatic, the trauma, the stress, the suicides, these things have gotten the attention of many, many people. There's not, I don't, domestic violence, all that stuff is the multiple deployments over the 20 years of Afghanistan and Iraq took a toll on a lot of people, a lot of family members. They're coming back home from overseas living, and they're doing bad things. They're doing bad things, getting themselves hurt or hurting other people. But it was just an accumulation of these things. When I got out, which was 10 years ago, 2014, they were talking about it even then. And then it just, like, now it's more and more of a topic of conversation of how to deal, how to identify someone who's a suicidal ideations or post-traumatic stress situations. But really, there's not a magic bullet. There's not, if there was a solution, we wouldn't be talking about it, but it continues to go on. Unfortunately, the transition back from a soldier to a civilian in many ways is different. I mean, they have done things. They have driven multi-million-dollar tanks. They've been in helicopters. They come back to civilian life and they're like, I can't associate with this stuff. You know, I used to do this, but now I'm in the Walmart. Maybe I'm just a box packer in the Walmart, but I used to drive a tank. So there's a lot of different things that go on. And I even had that too. I had to find my way where I wanted to go. It took me a while, and it took me a few years. And for the most part, when I got out, I just wanted mental health therapy. That's my focus. I said, I got to survive. I've got to find somebody to help me out. And I did that for a while. And there's a number of programs that I went through, but I had to work on that. And then eventually I said, well, I'm going to write some books. So I had to find my purpose. But it wasn't, it didn't come easy. I had to, because everybody in the military, you go here, you go here, you wear this, you wear that. Hell, I don't even know how to dress. I mean, I just put on a t-shirt. But because I knew my uniform was 31 years, I just wore the same uniform for the most part. I never wore the rank or the promotion. I never wore that on me. It was just a lifestyle. So my thoughts were, I'm going every 2 to 3 years, I'm moving and I'm seeing different people eating different foods from different places around the world. So that was just something that I was accustomed to. I'd never been really settled. I never had a garden. I got a garden now, but you don't have a dog. Don't have a dog because the dog, has to travel with you. It's more of a headache. So my life was more of a transitional, going here and going there and doing this and doing that. Transient. Just passing through. And that became a lifestyle. And then you stop and you want to become a civilian. And then you have a certain language and you have a certain culture. And then you have to throw that out or somehow modify that to become a civilian. And you think differently, you act differently, and somehow you have to adapt to a different lifestyle is what it is. Yeah.
So you had the books that kept you busy once you retired. Is there anything, you mentioned a garden. Are there any other things that you enjoy spending your time now that you're, you've been retired for quite some time? But some people also, you hear about having the talk about retirement anxiety. There's some people, like you said, once you're done, it's like, so what's left? Are there any things that you fill your days with that you enjoy filling your days with in projects or hobbies?
I've got 3 dogs. I've got an Australian Shepherd. I got a lab and I got a little Chihuahua. A little Mexican dog that's really not worth it. But I got a garden. I've got I exercise religiously.
That's good.
Because that's just, stay active. I'm on the books. I've got the podcast. I'm working on my third book. I've got 2 books, but I'm working on a third book. So it's going to be about toxic leadership. I'm talking about wicked workplaces. I kind of hinted to you a little bit about what I went through.
Yeah.
But I have many, many other people who've been in hell. They go to hell. Work is hell. Going to work and surviving on a day-to-day, a toxic leadership boss.
Okay.
But that's kind of what I'm going to go on a little bit. There was a study out. 20% of all CEOs are psychopaths. That is a study. And I, you know, Why am I
not surprised about that?
I want to go into that a little bit more, which I am. My days are filled with gardening, exercise, and dogs, and books, and reading, and things of that nature. So that's kind of what I'm going, and that's kind of what I'm going for. In retirement, when you retire, you want to have a purpose. You always want to have a purpose in life. Of course, I've financially become very good. I saved my money. I invested over time, and I've done very well. But also, once you retire, you still want to have a purpose in life, whatever it might be. And I think that's a big deal in finding your purpose.
Jason, my man, thank you for sharing your story, for being an open book, literally, and speaking your piece with us and taking us through your journey, lessons that you've learned, experiences that you've had, and how you were able to come out a better man. I hope you all enjoyed the conversation. The conversation, excuse the way that it cut off. That wasn't how it was planned. We had some audio difficulties. Something went wrong. There was a hiccup on my side and it stopped there. That's where the audio cut off. But talk about a fighting spirit, not giving up. Not giving in to the outside noise or chatter saying you can't do this or you can't do that. Jason was all about understanding himself, knowing where he was weak at, but he found his strong points and he worked on those, proved a lot of people wrong in the process. He challenged himself. From nothing comes nothing. Jason's an example of what hard work looks like, with some good, gritty, grindy hard work looks like. Nothing was given to him. He didn't receive any handouts. A lot of things didn't come naturally to him. He had to learn it. He had to figure it out. It took some doing. It took mistakes and failures to get it right, to figure it out, to sort through the madness and to find his own path. But he did it. He graduated high school. He received degrees, an author of 2 books and working on a 3rd one. Jason, without a doubt, you are a giant amongst us. So you can go to his website and find both of those books available. The first one is A Soldier Against All Odds, and that's a compilation of his life, the ups, the downs, all of his trials and tribulations while he was in uniform, the diversity of his jobs, his assignments, school. He covers all of that from ages 17 to 48. That's his memoir. And that's available in paperback, hardcover, and even Audible, where he's narrating the story in his own voice, giving you his raw emotion. The second book is Out of the Uniform, Back into Civilian Life. And of course, all of his information will be in the description box, so be sure to check that out. Again, Jason, I want to thank you for taking time out of your day to share your story. Appreciate you, and all the best, my friend. And as well, thank you to everybody tuned in far and wide. Appreciate you all. If you found value in any of this, you can share it with a friend. That's free of charge. Or you can share your thoughts by visiting the website, checking us out on YouTube. I started to put clips up here and there, and I'll be looking to do more with that. And we're also on Reddit. You guys have a good rest of the day. We're going to catch up real soon. And before I wrap this thing up, if you would like to be a part of the show and share your story, or even a story of someone in your life that has impacted you in a positive way, you can always reach out to me via email. I'd be happy to connect. Until next time, and very soon, peace.
Looking for a sign to know I'm on the right road. Ain't seen no sign since.